Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, July 20, 2015. Lawmakers are asking the government to provide security for travelers after four people were killed along the Juba-Kajokeji road over the weekend.
The road Terkeka to the Huron, people have been attacked. Even traders were attacked there who were taking food to the Baragazan. They went to Ye, also was attacked. We are going to go to them and to hear from the government whether the government is going to provide for you a mobile force, a force that will accompany your vehicles.
And youth in Unity State are embracing the defection of a major general from rebels aligned with former Vice President Riek Machar.
Senior commanders have come in. And, you know, one good example, I would say General James Guy, you have actually come just the other day, and a number of them have been coming in. A lot of them are frustrated, and they're really coming, you know, to try to see how we can formulate a peace.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Four people, including two foreigners, were killed when gunmen opened fire on a vehicle traveling on the road linking Juba to Kajokeji County. Four other people were wounded in the attack, which happened on Saturday. One of the wounded is fighting for her life in a hospital in Juba. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA on this latest attack on South Sudan's roads.
Two women and two men were killed in the Saturday incident. Among the dead were a Ugandan and a Sudanese, along with the two South Sudanese. Agretisa, chairperson of the Kajokeji community, spoke with the journalist Sunday at Juba Teaching Hospital, where the bodies of the deceased were being autopsied.
The truck that fell into the ambush of about six armed men was carrying 14 passengers. Out of those, four are confirmed dead. One lady is badly injured. There is still a bullet lodged in her chest, fighting for her life. The rest suffered non-life-threatening injuries.
Police spokesman James Mande Enoka says the shootings happened about 16 miles from Juba and not far from an SPLA military barracks. Mande says security has been stepped up along the road since the attack. He says security officers need help from the public to track down those responsible for the deadly violence.
South Sudan National Police Service is appealing to the community to cooperate with the police by providing information about the movement and activities of these criminals who are actually causing havoc on the road. We, South Sudan Police Service, regret this incident and we convey our condolences to the families of the grieved victims.
Tisa, who also serves as an advisor on economic affairs to President Salva Kiir, says that unless security along the road is markedly improved, Kajokeji County could lose access to the capital, which is its main market for goods and services.
If this guarantee for security along the road comes immediately, I think there will be no interruption in transportation. But if it doesn't come, a guarantee for safe security along the road doesn't come, it's difficult for any individual to force them to move along the road on their own.
Attacks on roads linking Juba to provincial towns and counties are not uncommon. Early this month, at least four people were killed and their property taken when the vehicle they were traveling in on the Juba to Ye road was attacked. But Tisa says Saturday's attack appears to have a more sinister motive.
Many of those attacks were limited to robbing money and property from the passengers. But what happened yesterday had nothing to do with the robbery of property or money. It was meant to kill.
Patrick Walian is the speaker of Kajokeji County Council. He says the state and national governments must step up security along the road. He says transportation companies have already threatened to stop carrying goods along the road because of the dangers. Mary Kiden, a national MP from Kajokeji County, says the national government has done little to prevent attacks on travelers.
The road Terkeka to the Huron, people have been attacked. Even traders were attacked there who were taking food to the Baragazan. They went to Ye, also was attacked. We are going to go to them and to hear from the government whether the government is going to provide for you a mobile force, a force that will accompany your vehicles.
Police spokesman Mande says law enforcement officials have proved that members members of the police force, army and national security service have been involved in criminal activities, especially in Juba.
I cannot deny that some of the organized forces are implicated in crime. The fact that the evidence is that we have arrested many of them. In all of the organized forces, some individuals have been arrested committing crime. This is the proof that some of the organized forces commit crime, as well as civilians.
The investigation into Saturday's attack is still ongoing, and it is still too early to say who was responsible for it. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Turning to Unity State now, youth are welcoming the defection of Major General James Guy Yoch from Riek Machar's rebels of the SPLM in opposition. In a statement released on Saturday in Juba, some members of Rupkorn County say the decision of Guy to join South Sudan's army last month will bring stability to Unity State. Lam Tongwar is the Minister of Culture, Youth and Sports in Unity State. Tongwar, who confirmed General Guy's defection, says most SPLM in opposition commanders who hail from Bentiu are abandoning Riek Machar.
The commanders who are there, who are from, you know, our community in Bentiu, have realized that whatever is happening in the opposition is not really like a serious strategized kind of movement that they really need to keep up with. So they have seen that it is losing life and they don't have good plans on the other side of opposition, and they start, you know, wearing out to have a focus. And most of them, that's why you see they are coming willingly, you know, to the government. That is based on my own understanding.
How many commanders from the SPLA in opposition have joined the government so far? Commanders from Bentiu?
I don't speak on behalf of the SPLA headquarters, but in particular, there is a number of them actually who have come. Small commanders, you know, junior commanders have come in, you know, senior commanders have come in. And, you know, one good example, I could say General James Guy Yoch have actually come just the other day, and a number of them have been coming in. A lot of them are frustrated, and they're really coming, you know, to try to see how we can formulate a peace, and a peace that can save people, but not just senseless war from one time to the other time.
And some of these commanders who are coming back, I'm sure they are from Unity State, as you stated earlier. Have you been talking to them, and what are they telling you?
Basically, I've talked to a number of them who are coming, of course. Those who have come back, I've talked to a number of them on my own, you know, government level of Unity State. And what they're telling me as their own opinion is basically what I'm telling you right now, that John, the principal of opposition, in terms of, you know, keep on fighting, is not in place. There's a lot of differences that is going on within themselves. And there's a way that their commander, who does not have a job description, who don't have, you know, instructions from their bosses in a way how to handle a fight. You know, this general did not just come about as a general. They have fought big battles. They have, you know, participated in the liberation of our country until we get the independence. So there's a way they know exactly how the war system goes. So if you have a war that you just keep on, you know, initiating, and you don't have a plan on how to save life.
You were telling me that you visited a lot of areas in Unity State, and you say the condition of the people there is very, very bad. What is the state government doing to help these people?
We have embarked back with our governor, Unity State, Dr. Justin Wenman, here right now, with the help of national government to make sure that, you know, we fix whatever we can fix at the moment. And the particular basic thing that needs to be handled first is the civilian safety, civilian, you know, basic needs, you know, civilian, you know, service that need to be delivered to them. You understand? And their protection. And this is exactly what we're working on. We have not embarked back on the development or, you know, building roads or stuff like that, or even the broken bridges. But we're working on how these civilians could come back. And I understand that the government was not targeting any civilian. It was a fight between the government trying to dislodge the rebels who are trying, you know, to cripple the Unity State economy and even the people and the government itself. So, and this is what actually we are campaigning on. And if you, I believe me not, right now, if I'm talking to you, Unity State is filled up of all the civilians from across all the counties. All of them with their capitals and everything, they have come to Unity State and they're actually sheltering under the government, you know. And they're living there comfortably. Nobody's asking them for taxation as the rebels do outside. You know, nobody asks for anything that is needed from them. And that's exactly what we're looking for these guys, so that they can actually protect their cattle, they can protect their life and live a good life and have their food here, and their government will work for them. This is exactly not for civilian. The government is not targeting any civilian whatsoever. You know, all those mad rumors that have been spread all around the world, you know, are not something I've witnessed myself. You know me, John, I've worked as an artist. I've worked as, you know, for UN. I've done a lot of international conferences on advocacy. You know, I understand exactly what should be the right thing to be said. You know, and I've talked to people, I've witnessed this, only that when crisis happen, you know, they do not select people that this is a good person, this is a bad person.
That's Unity State Minister of Culture, Youth and Sports. He was speaking to me earlier today here in Washington, D.C., where he's attending a U.S. State Department-sponsored leadership training. For more reaction on the defection of Major General James Guy, VOA fellow Kangu Tito Justin spoke to Mabior Garang, the SPLM in opposition spokesperson.
Generally, defections do happen. People defect from the government and come to us, and people leave from us and go to the government. So it is not something very strange.
Okay, now looking at these defections, how significant is the defection of these such majors to your army?
Well, I think that peace is imminent right now, and this is where we are putting our focus on. At the end of the day, we will all be together in Juba, you know, when we have an agreement. So even if they have gone back to the government, it is their choice, and it is their right to choose where they are going to put their political allegiance. And this is what we are fighting for as an opposition, for people to be able to have that right. So
sometimes when generals defect from government to your side, you say it is significant and historic. And why do you say this defection is not significant and is just obvious?
What I have said is that some generals defect from the government and come to us, and some of them defect from us and go to the government, and it is a normal thing. It's not something which should be a big shock. But what we are really focusing on now is the peace process and finding peace. And the IGAD Plus and the IGAD proposal, which is before the table right now.
Okay, now I think they continue to defect like this. Does it show that now the fighting is going to an end?
The recent illegal swearing in of the president without the Electoral Commission declaring him as president, when there is actually an agreement on the table which would legitimize the president legally for the next 3 years, should be an indication that that the government is not serious about peace. But despite all this, we are still engaged in the process. And like I said, we are going to focus on the peace process that is before us. If we are attacked, we will defend ourselves.
That's Mabior Garang, a spokesperson for the SPLM in opposition. He was speaking to VOA fellow Kangu Tito Justin this past hour from Nairobi. Officials in eastern Equatorial State say thousands of residents do not have enough to eat. Samuel Felix Makuja, the commissioner of Budi County, which is one of the areas that are hard hit by the hunger crisis, says the food shortages are caused by a drought that destroyed farmers' crops. Philip Thornaleu reports for VOA from Juba.
Commissioner Makuja says the past rains this year started in early March, which is traditionally the beginning of South Sudan's farming season. Makuja says farmers planted promptly, but since then there has been no rain and more crops have withered and died, he says.
Well, there is really hunger, terrible hunger in the county, which I believe may not be only Budi County, but I believe even in the surrounding neighboring counties. And of course, though historically Budi County has been a self-reliant county.
Makuja says Budi County falls within the country's so-called Green Belt Zones, which normally receive sufficient rainfall year-round. Clement Lakushichim, the state minister of agriculture, says there was not enough rain in 7 other counties of eastern Equatoria. He says the short-term weather focus is for insufficient rain to support crop growth.
There, if you go in the greater Kapeta, you'll find that the area is completely dry, as if we are in dry season. So in that aspect, then, which means all the crops there are destroyed.
South Sudan's rainy season generally starts in April and ends in November. Chichim says he is still hoping for enough rain to support planting.
And we are expecting by August that maybe at least there will be actually rain, so that phase two of our agricultural season will be able to plant some of the crops again in order to see to it that maybe it will help our people. The other alternative that we are now giving to our people, as you know, that Eastern Equatorial State also is rich with animal resources. We cannot depend on the cereals. Therefore, we encourage the pastoral of this community to come up and also begin to sell some of their animals in order to make to get money in order to get some food from the market.
However, Chichim admits that will only be a short-term solution to the anger problem. And Commissioner Makuja says not every Blijar has an animal to sell to gain money. Besides, he says, in many Eastern Equatorial State markets, there is no food to sell anyway.
As we know, with the current economic situation in our country, lack of hard currency, people could not afford to sell anything to get any currency or take any food crops or products to the neighboring countries.
Chichim says his ministry sent out a team last week to conduct a thorough assessment of the drought and hunger problems. Chichim says once the assessment team returns to Torit later this week, state government officials will decide on what steps to take to address the situation. Chichim and Makuja are calling on humanitarian agencies and the national government to help the state overcome the crisis. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, electoral officials in Burundi say they are ready for tomorrow's elections despite controversy surrounding the incumbent president running for another term. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you have any regrets?
I would not call them regrets because each and every opportunity or mistake in life opens a door for another awesome thing in life. So I think I would regard them as opportunities, not regrets. So I have no regrets so far.
Not really, because I think everything that happens, it's part of life. You just have to learn to accept reality.
When I was in primary and secondary, I didn't study as the way I was supposed to study. I was just going to school for the purpose of being there, but not learning. So when I finished senior six, I regretted a lot for wasting the time because there are a lot of important information I could get and I could focus. So that's my regret.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A new report largely blames man-made factors for most disaster-related displacement. The International Displacement Monitoring Center of the Norwegian Refugee Council reports more than 19.3 million people in 100 countries were forced to flee their homes in 2014 because of natural disasters such as floods, storms, and earthquakes. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The Internal Displacement Monitoring Center of the Norwegian Refugee Council report finds an average of 22.5 million people have been displaced by climate or weather-related disasters each year since 2008. It says Asia, which is home to 60% of the world's population, accounts for 87% of those displaced last year. It notes people in China, India, and the Philippines were the most severely affected. In 2014, the report says Europe experienced double its average level of displacement for the past 7 years, while displacement in Africa was three times lower than the average. But relative to their population size, the report says many African countries, such as Sudan, experienced high levels of disaster displacement. The report notes climate change is expected to increase the frequency, and intensity of natural disasters. It says rapid economic development, urbanization, and population growth in hazard-prone areas are the man-made factors driving an overall trend in increasing disaster displacement. Internal Displacement Monitoring Center Director Alfredo Zamudio says the likelihood of people becoming displaced by disaster today is 60% higher than four decades ago.
Our report shows that how it is not the hazard itself that determines the devastation it causes. In fact, much of it is driven by man-made factors. Indeed, most of the displacement is related to the impact of climate or weather hazards.
The International Organization for Migration assisted in data collection for the report. IOM Director General William Lacey Swing tells VOA the impact on forced migration when climate change kicks in will exacerbate an already serious situation.
There are more people in movement today than at any other time in recorded history, about 1 billion out of our 7 billion world. Quarter of these crossing borders and three-quarters moving within their own country. Secondly, the percentage of these who are forced to migrate is also unprecedented.
Authors of the report say preventive measures such as the construction of buildings that can withstand earthquakes or early warning systems to alert communities of the onset of storms or floods can reduce the risks from natural hazards and lighten their tragic after effects. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
International medical charity Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, says one of the refugee camps that is taking in Burundians fleeing their country is almost at a breaking point. MSF says in a statement that there are already 78,000 Burundians and 64,000 Congolese in Nyarugusu camp in neighboring Tanzania. The camp was built to host a maximum of 50,000 refugees. A spokesman for MSF says about 1,000 Burundians continue to cross the border daily and aid agencies are struggling to provide them with food, water, shelter and health care. Nyarugusu camp also has been hit by an outbreak of cholera. MSF set up a cholera treatment center in the camp in May. The medical aid group says more than 170,000 people in the camp have been vaccinated against cholera so far, and 270,000 liters of clean drinking water are distributed every day in the camp. Burundi's electoral body says it is ready for tomorrow's presidential vote and working around the clock with security agencies to secure polling centers and voters in what has been a violent lead-up to the controversial elections. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Bujumbura.
In the past 3 months, more than 100 people have been killed and at least 150,000 have fled Burundi into neighbouring countries since President Pierre Nkurunziza announced his bid to run for a third term. National Election Commission spokesman Prosper Ntahogwamiye says the election board is prepared for the polling. Ntahogwamiye says the election officials are briefing the polling station officials about the electoral processes and distributing voting materials in different polling centres across the country. He says they are urging officials and workers to collaborate with the security agencies in making sure there is enough security for both the election materials and voters. There is fear among some voters that the polling will be marred by violence. The last remaining opposition candidates withdrew from the presidential race, saying the country's political situation, including widespread intimidation and the threat of violence, does not allow for free, fair and peaceful elections. The pullout by the opposition is seen by many as a blow to the democratic process in Burundi. The Electoral Commission notes the names of the candidates will remain on the ballot papers. With President Pierre Nkurunziza the only candidate, Ntahogwamiye says it is uncertain when the result will be announced. He says the law does not specify an exact time or date to announce the results, but an effort will be made to announce the results as soon as possible. Critics have insisted President Nkurunziza must step aside after serving the two constitutional allowed terms. But Burundi's Constitutional Court has ruled he's eligible for a third term, because he was chosen by lawmakers and not popularly elected for his first term. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Bujumbura.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. U.S. President Barack Obama is hosting Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari for a meeting today at the White House. The threat posed by Boko Haram militants is expected to be a priority in the talks. The two leaders will also likely discuss proposed political and economic reforms in Nigeria aimed at ending widespread corruption. The four-day trip to the United States is Mr. Buhari's first visit to Washington since being elected in March and taking office in May in a peaceful transition of power. Nigeria is important to the U.S. because it is the most populous African country and is one of the richest countries on the continent. Nigeria is also a strong U.S. ally. The White House says the visit emphasizes America's commitment to strengthening and expanding its partnership with Nigeria's new government and supporting its people. Four people, including two foreigners, were gunned down when armed men opened fire on a truck traveling on the road linking Juba to Kejukeji County over the weekend. Four other people were wounded in the Saturday attack. One of the wounded remains in critical condition in a hospital in Juba. Two women and two men were killed in that attack. Agrey Tisa, chairman of the Kejukeji community, told reporters at Juba Teaching Hospital, where the bodies of the dead were being autopsied, that about six armed men ambushed the vehicle carrying about 14 people. And finally, authorities in eastern Equatoria State say thousands of South Sudanese citizens are going hungry. The commissioner of Budi County, one of the areas most affected by food insecurity in the area, says the food shortages are caused by a drought that destroyed farmers' crops. Commissioner Sam Felix Makuja says the first rains this year started in early March, which is traditionally the beginning of South Sudan's farming season. Makuja says farmers planted promptly, but he says since then there's been no rain and most crops have dried out and died. Makuja says Budi County had been self-reliant up until the drought occurred. Budi County falls within the country's so-called green belt zones, which normally get enough rainfall year-round, according to Makuja. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song "And Then a Bellet Jadid" by Ras Corby.
Mamutanimi, for whom I'm Jagalu, I'm Junobi, mind you how cool.
We have been listening to Russ Corby with that song and the Nabeled Jadid. I'm your host, John Tanza, in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.